Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, late night in studio, New York City, with Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. I still have plenty of energy. I've been talking for like probably about 9 hours today with various people. We had a very interesting, entertaining live show. Kyle O'Quinn, Kwame Brown dropping heat, David Kahn. Garrett Temple, I think future GM Garrett Temple is how we should address him. The guy is unbelievably polished, and he's going places. Let me just put it that way.
Okay.
But I still have energy because I was thinking back to this axiom that I was taught way back when I was first getting into the writing game, and it goes something like this. You don't ever get respect until your second job.
Right.
Your first job, even if you get promoted, even if you have more responsibilities, even if you get higher salary, you don't really get the respect because they always view you as the guy they hired.
That's a good point.
Okay. This brings me to Jimmy Butler and the disaster that is the Chicago Bulls. Because when they got Jimmy, when they brought Jimmy Butler into the NBA, they coaxed him up. They worked on his game. He worked on his game. He transformed from a forgotten role player at the end of the first round of the draft. By the time many people had tuned out tonight, that's where Jimmy Butler got drafted. Turns into an all-star, all-NBA level player. I would consider at this point one of the top 10 to 12 all-around players in the NBA.
Yeah, you're a Jimmy stan.
They never respected him. They never treated him like a franchise player, period. They put him in stupid trade rumors for a solid 14 or 15 months, and then they traded him for spare parts. They are the biggest losers of the draft, the Chicago Bulls. They have no direction, and contrarily, Tom Thibodeau welcomes in the best player the Timberwolves have had since prime Kevin Garnett. Minnesota's going to the playoffs next year. You were wrong last year. I'm right this year. Pencil it in.
Welcome aboard the Wolves bandwagon. Thank you. We've been waiting for you. Here we are. Jimmy Butler can bring us together. All right. Now, before we jump in, I feel like we've skipped a couple steps. Today, I don't even know if we're going to get to any questions. I know we had one Knicks fan who told me to suck it because I downplayed their international scouting. And lo and behold, Frank Ntilikina is the pick there. Anyways, we're going to go across the league with winners and losers. I will say I'm impressed by your energy. It's about 1:30 a.m. In New York here. You've been talking, you talked for 4 hours straight on the draft show.
Yeah.
I just filed my late night draft grades, and I got to be honest with you, about halfway through the draft, like, I've been staring at Twitter nonstop for like 96 hours.
Can I tell people about the video I took of you today?
Yes.
You wouldn't let me share this on Twitter. People out there, I've got some great uncut footage, unreleased footage of Andrew Sharp. So Andrew was sitting at a table with his feet up on the table this afternoon, about 3 hours before the draft. Obviously, he's refreshing Twitter, just praying for that Paul George to DC rumor that we all know is not coming.
Look, this
never coming. So I was standing by him, and I was all dressed up and suited up and just trying to get his attention, like a little child that I am. I'm waving my hand probably 8 feet from your face. I was waving my hand 8 feet from your face.
For like 90 seconds.
No, longer than that. It was about 3 minutes. I was doing it from various angles, thinking that I would catch like your side glance. Never happened. So then I decided I'm going to film it. I'm just going to see how long I can film with my camera myself waving at you. I made it 32 seconds. You finally leaned forward because I think maybe you got like a leg cramp from having your feet above your head for so long. And you're like, what are you doing? And I was like, well, I don't know what you're doing, but I'm over here trying to have a conversation about basketball.
Yeah, well, I could feel you lurking, and I was just trying to have some downtime. I don't know. Look, all right. Again, it's all fun and games until technology just melts your brain. Like about halfway, because that like Woj and Shams were like a couple picks ahead, and I was trying to keep track of everything, and eventually I'm just fried. So we'll see how this podcast goes.
Yeah, well, right now, just so the listeners know, you're wearing a t-shirt and you've been wearing a t-shirt all day that says basketball never stops. So it's almost like you're a junkie bragging at this point with your clothing attire.
Well, let's dig into the draft.
Let's
do
it.
I think we have to start.
We start where I said we start.
Yes, we start with the Bulls. What the hell happened, man?
Brutal.
And first of all, you don't get to claim you're right. I've said for a long time they've been like they want to trade Jimmy, and they just have not been invested in him for whatever reason. Yeah. But and look, the way Paul George's situation has played out is plenty of justification for dealing Jimmy yeah. now. But the return is just crappy.
What I'm saying is they screwed this up a while ago. They screwed this up when they didn't manage the coaching transition properly, when yeah. they didn't have a coach that would mesh with their star player, when they didn't build a roster that made sense around Jimmy Butler, when they went to the three alphas, the failed three alphas. It didn't make sense here where they decided, yeah, we're going to choose Fred over Jimmy. Oh, great call. Really wonderful decision there. And it also failed on the terms, because it wasn't just like a bad package. They're daring their fan base to revolt by taking Lowry Markkanen, are they not? Well, especially after investing like 42 picks in Doug McDermott not that long ago, only to turn around to trade him to Oklahoma City. Now you're going to bring back a 7-footer who's shoot only, no defense, and probably play him as a stretch guy, right?
Yeah.
That's just unbelievable.
We don't need to get into it now, but I feel like there at some point there's a longer conversation to be had about which team is actually most depressing between the Knicks and the Bulls, because the Lowry move was the move I was expecting from the Bulls about 4 o'clock this afternoon. And the reason I was refreshing Twitter all day was because I really thought Porzingis was going to get traded.
Yeah.
And I was expecting them to replace him with Lowry and in what would have been the most unforgivable turn of events in like recent NBA offseason history.
But Garpax beat him to the punch.
Garpax beat him, man. And I think like on the low, the Bulls are the most depressing team in the NBA. So I don't know. I mean, I like Lowry. We've been over this. I have hope for him. I don't really have hope for him in Chicago. Yeah. And the other thing with this Wolves deal, I mean, I think we've mentioned it a couple times over the course of the year. Like this deal was available last year, and had Tibbs made the deal to send LaVine and Chris Dunn to Chicago, he would have gotten killed at the draft. People would have, because people had their guard up for him making basically like short-term win-now moves, and people would have said like Chris Dunn's a future superstar, Zach LaVine's a future superstar.
And going back to the same players from the past, right? Because as soon as he trades for Jimmy, everyone's like, oh no, he's going to he's going for Derek, he's going for Joakim.
He's pulling in Taj Gibson, he's trading Kat for Taj.
Yep.
So that he didn't do that. And then by December of this year, it was clear that it was a mistake to say no to that trade. I don't know if he necessarily backed out or it was the Bulls who got cold feet, but that was clearly the right move to make.
Yeah.
And then the Bulls just offered it again, it looks like. Like, after we had 7 months of evidence that Chris Dunn is probably not... I mean, Chris Dunn, he's a guy I wasn't real high on in the draft, although he looked great in Vegas.
He did look great.
And that's when I really jumped on the Wolves bandwagon hard. So he's a guy, though, in the NBA, against actual NBA players, like he just, it's not only that he can't shoot, he just kind of looks slower and smaller than I expected out there.
Because he was blowing people up. He was looking physical, like eating people up off the dribble in Vegas, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a jump from Vegas to the NBA, and he didn't make that jump.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, you're not really a football fan, but when I saw Johnny Manziel in the NFL, it was not only that he was like a step slow, but he was so small that I was like, this guy is just not going to succeed.
Like, he could run for his life in college, but he's just running to his death in the NFL.
Like, next to NFL defensive linemen, it was not going to work. And that's how I feel about Chris Dunn. So he's like one of the best kids that was available in the draft, like just in terms of his personality. Like, he's just a great guy and has a pretty inspiring story. And so I hope he gets it together in Chicago and has a decent career. But what the fuck are the Bulls doing, man?
I don't know. Like, all three of these pieces have questions, right? Like, because Dunn might not ever reach that lottery ceiling, like you're saying. LaVine, I mean, even let's give him full health. Like, let's just take the injury part out of it. I mean, he's a polarizing player for a reason. Like, the advanced stats just don't like him as a defensive player. That's going to be an issue. And then with Lowry, I think it's kind of a similar thing too, right? Like, his ceiling, like you've mentioned, is fairly high as an offensive player. But again, positionally, is he going to be one of these two-way guys who really makes sense and has a position that he can defend? I'm not sure. I mean, can you use him and defend multiple positions? I don't know.
Yeah, well, and they also, they didn't even work him out. I mean, they didn't really do due diligence here. And there's just a lot of red flags there.
Yeah.
They also, let's not forget that they traded for Michael Carter-Williams in October. Completely inexplicable. They traded for Cam Payne, which was also pretty dicey.
He played like 12 minutes down the stretch. He was supposed to be the point guard of the future, which now that's going to be a great training camp battle between him and Chris Dunn, you know?
Yeah, well, and the guys that were sitting there on the board, it wasn't hard to foresee that, like, Dennis Smith was going to be there at 7, Malik Monk. Like, they were going to be backcourt guys. Like, you can't trade for LaVine and Dunn and then take another guard in either Monk or Dennis Smith, but those were the guys who graded out. So it's almost like the Bulls never think that far.
Yeah, well, slow down. Because I saw a quote from Garpax coming out of their press conference, which was, we now have a clear direction. Is that direction tank? I mean, is that what they're doing? Are we about to see, if Wade stays there, is he about to play like 35 games, catch the fattest paychecks, maybe get bought out, you know, hop onto a contender? I mean, is that the direction this is going? Are they going to play for the number one pick? They're not good.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so, but I don't think that...
Maybe they're not that bad, but here's the thing about Jimmy.
I think they have a clear direction, and that clear direction is suck, like 25 wins.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the direction that Gar and Pax are talking about. Yeah.
That's a consistent problem for them. Here's two more things that I hate about this Jimmy trade. One, the cost. Like, Jimmy is a great value on his current contract, not only this season, for next season. He is not one of these guys who's making like $30 million, completely crippling your thing. The second is, this is not just a concern about some of these younger players not being able to step up next season. This season, this past season, when they were trying to win, were trying to be a playoff team, loaded up in free agency, when Jimmy was off the court, they were awful, terrible. Yes. I mean, comparable to some of the worst teams in the league. So, they have the evidence in front of them. It just seems like they're choosing to ignore all the evidence. And I'm wondering, do you think there's going to be a little bit of a post-trade slander campaign coming out about, oh, Jimmy's personality, oh, you know, Jimmy in the locker room, you know, Jimmy and Dwayne and their little clique, and they didn't respect Hoiberg, and, you know, the organization wanted to stand by their coach. I kind of feel like that might bubble here. And I think that would be unfair because they didn't treat him like a franchise player, like I said, the whole way through. Once he developed and proved he could do it, remember, they didn't give him that contract early. They lowballed him on his first deal. They only paid him because they had to after the fact. I just think this is going to go down as one of the most botched, successful development efforts we've seen in the NBA.
It's true, because they deserve credit for drafting him. Yeah. He turned into a superstar, but man, every move over the last 3 or 4 years has just been a mess.
An offshoot from this, though, and I want to hear what you have to say on it. Does this make the Cavs a little bit of a winner because it takes Butler out of play for Boston? I mean, are they sort of a tangential, like kind of a, you know, indirect winner? Because
I don't know. I would say that they're a little bit of a tangential loser, because if that was the price for Jimmy Butler, I feel like they probably could have figured out a way to get him.
Yeah.
So like the Cavs. So that's why you don't fire your GM 3 days before the draft. But, you know.
I also think, though, who's ever left in that draft room is kind of like, whew.
One of my favorite details of the whole Griffin fiasco was the report that he came out. The report that came out that said he left, like, steps to get Jimmy Butler, like a treasure map.
Clearly, escape room?
Yeah, clearly someone couldn't read the map that he left the Cavs. But your point about Jimmy is a good segue into the Wolves, because I wonder about the contract. I wonder about the personality stuff. First of all, Bulls slander campaign is 100% going into overdrive with their little birdies in the Chicago media.
Everybody gets another comparison to the Knicks because everybody gets on Phil Jackson for that Charlie Rosen. There's a couple of Charlie Rosens in Chicago.
Yo,
some Windy City Charlies.
That office has no idea how to win, but they know how to leak. And so that will happen. But I think some of the Jimmy personality stuff is pretty real. And just from stuff that I've heard, like, he's not the easiest teammate. And
he's a demanding guy. He's competitive, and a lot came to him quickly. I mean, you can never overlook that. Even Draymond said that, you know, his life got away from him a little bit last summer. You know, he wasn't used to expecting all that success. He was a second round guy. All of a sudden he blows up. Now his life's going crazy. All these people are coming at him. You have to adjust to that. And Jimmy's in a similar situation. I mean, he wasn't even the guy halfway through his first rookie contract. All of a sudden, boom, it's his team. There's this tension with him and Rose, supposedly. A lot of stuff was going on. I get it. But still, I mean, you give leeway to your best players, right? Especially if those guys play defense. To me, if you lead by example on the defensive end, you score and you don't take crazy shots, you maintain your efficiency, the team plays way better when you're on the court than when you're off. You can get after some young guys in the locker.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I just think that if there's one factor that gives me a little bit of pause in terms of, look, I'm ready to put the Wolves in the fucking finals. You know me.
You know what's great is I was sitting in this very same seat when I bet you $50 last year that Karl Anthony Towns would not win MVP. I'm ready to bet you $50 that they don't make the finals.
Yes. No, I'm not serious about that, but I'm a believer. I really think that they're going to be a lot of fun. But if there's one factor that I wonder about, it's like, how does his personality mesh with Wiggins, Towns, you know, like he is tough to be around.
Let me put it this way. I think the bigger question is, how does Wiggins mesh with Jimmy? Because this is now Jimmy's team. And look, Towns, arguably the best player on the roster. I mean, you can go back and forth. Who's better?
I don't know if it's...
But age-wise, personality-wise, and relationship between Jimmy and Tibbs, it's going to be Jimmy's team.
Well...
That could be a fair question, but look, who needs to get on the board here? I expect Towns to get on the board. Okay, that guy comes off like a Boy Scout.
Yeah.
He works hard.
Yeah.
You can tell just how polished his game is. He puts in work. The knock on Wiggins has always been, does he take plays off? Does he fall asleep? Is he reaching his full athletic potential? If I have a guy in that situation, I can't think of a better model for, you know, the kind of work it takes to get to fulfill that high level potential than a Jimmy Butler. There's going to be some bumping of heads. I expect that.
Yes.
But I also think that Wiggins is now going to get a firsthand look at what he needs to be doing to become the guy we all thought he could be when he was the number one pick.
Well, you know what? I was going to ask about Jimmy's contract and whether he might stay, but I'm honestly sick of the like superstars going to the Lakers stuff. So you know what? Well, we're just going to pretend that Jimmy is on the Wolves in perpetuity.
Well, the good news is, you know, Tibbs will pay him.
Tibbs will pay him, and let's wait and see. We'll have those conversations in February.
They haven't even gotten close to the season preview part of the playoff discussion for next year yet. We don't need to run Jimmy out of town quite yet.
But they're going to be a factor, I think. I think that that's a real thing. So where should we go next, you know?
Well, actually, I have an interesting stat here. This came through. This is not one of these fake stats that I make up sometimes. This one's actually real. It came through from Twitter. And surprisingly, Jimmy Butler was not the most tweeted moment of the night because they can tell, you know, per second, per minute, who gets the most tweets.
Yeah.
It wasn't Lonzo. Okay. Lonzo was two, which shocked me. Do you know what the number one moment was? The Celtics taking Jason Tatum. And remember, we had this conversation about, like, you got to get into spin mode quick because you didn't get Paul George. You didn't get Jimmy Butler. I mean, I guess you could still get Paul George. You didn't get Lonzo. You didn't get Markelle Fultz. You take Jason Tatum, very flat personality, polished offensive game, score. He's going to be able to play rotation minutes for them next season. But does this Twitter activity signal unrest in Boston?
Look, I don't blame Boston fans for feeling some unrest. Like, even I'm not a Boston fan, and I'm bummed out by the Celtics at this point. We've had so many different rumors, so many different close calls. I'm just sick of it, you know? And I can't imagine if I were a Celtics fan, sort of like living and dying with every twist and turn.
Yeah.
Like, they've all got to be worn out. And Jason Tatum, man, I mean, who knows? He's 19 years old. He could be really good. But I don't really see it. Do you? Yeah.
I didn't love him from the tape that I watched. I'll admit it wasn't a ton.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think that the fact that he can play now helps. Like, you know, he's not completely raw. I think if you had drafted on like pure, like regardless of fit, if you had taken like best player available, highest ceiling, or if you hadn't traded the number one pick and gone that direction somehow, I could see that have making less sense for a team where they are.
Yeah.
But one of my bigger takeaways from Boston these last couple of days, just talking to people, people are ready to sell Isaiah stock quickly. Like the amount of...
Talking to like what kind of people?
Just like media people or just okay. people who have been around. It's like this notion that, yes, they made the conference finals, but is Isaiah really the best player, quote unquote, on a finals type team? A lot of doubt still in terms of his ability to be that main ball handler to take them to the next level, right? So I guess... The panic would be coming from you only get Tatum. You know, he's only going to be, even if he starts for you, he's probably not going to be playing huge minutes. If he doesn't, he's like eighth man, right? Seventh, right. eighth man. The panic would be coming from those people saying that's not enough to lift this group up any higher than they were this season. And we just all wasted 6 months of our lives expecting the Celtics to make the leap and they didn't make the leap.
Yeah, well, this isn't the time to make the leap. So I kind of understand taking the longer view. If I were taking the longer view, Tatum wouldn't be the guy.
Yeah.
I would have stuck with Markelle Fultz. And if I were trading Markelle Fultz for an extra pick, I would have used those picks to go get to overpay for Porzingis or, you know, Jimmy was available, clearly.
Like, yeah. Very available.
I don't know what we're doing here, Danny. Like, I don't really get what's happening. So the one thing I'm wary of sort of writing this off too, because I think that if they were trading for Paul George, if they were giving up that number three pick for George, wouldn't it make sense to just wait to consummate that deal?
Yeah.
Because you don't want to add that salary before free agency. They probably have to clear a few other contracts given the cap coming in lower than expected.
Yeah, it could get tricky too, especially if they're going to make a splash signing. Like there may be an order of operations that has to play out.
Right.
Like if you're going to add a Hayward, then trade multiple guys to get George. And it did seem like Woj was sprinkling some breadcrumbs with the talks are ongoing. And there was some stuff from Pritchard saying, you know, we're not going to sell low, basically, is what he was saying about Paul George. So it still seems like George is very, 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 very available, even for a rental. Like, it didn't seem like they were just going to run and hand him to the Lakers.
Yeah, yeah, no question. And not only that, the Pacers have to trade him.
Oh, yeah. Well, we have been saying that. I mean, that's where Loose Lips Paul came from.
Right, so... There's no question that Paul George, while not traded tonight, which coming into the draft, I was like, well, Paul George is going to be somewhere else in 2 hours.
I was surprised that it was Jimmy and not Paul. I thought it would have been the other way.
And I think the fact that he stayed a Pacer is an indication that the Celtics are going to do something 10 days into free agency. And they will go to Gordon Hayward and say, look, you can sign here. We're about to trade for Paul George for the next year, and let's make this work.
But Andrew, you just said 2 minutes ago that we shouldn't be riding the Celtics emotional roller coaster. You just got back in line for it.
I am not. But I'm saying renting Paul George actually does make some sense, even if you think that he's going to go to LA, if you think that he's going to help win the Gordon Hayward sweepstakes.
I'm in. Which, I think they should do it.
Yeah.
I've been saying it, tool up. I just meant that you said, hey, these guys are up and down. It's exhausting. And then you're like, hey, just wait for July 1.
No,
it's only 8 days away.
It's funny because I did the draft grades. I think I gave them like a C+ or something. And I have them in the losers category. But as I talk this through, the more it seems like, the George deal is coming.
But that's the allure of age.
I know. I'm sick of all of this shit. I really am.
That's what I was looking for. Who else did you have as winners? I'm interested.
The Sixers are winners, man.
I agree. I think the winners are at the top. I'd say both the Sixers and the Lakers are big winners. That's the easy take because we knew those were going to be their guys. They're going home happy tonight. I mean, both those teams are selling tickets.
So the thing with the Sixers is imagine what this draft was supposed to be for them. Like they were supposed to be in three.
We got Jackson. Yeah, cool. He doesn't really fit. Like,
I still think Colangelo would have taken Tatum, which is another, again, like kind of an underwhelming move. And imagine if you're a Sixers fan trying to talk yourself into Jason Tatum and Ben Simmons tonight. And
they would have done it.
Oh, yeah. And then you're just like, oh, okay, I guess this is the plan.
It is a letdown.
And instead, like, Fultz makes Simmons so much more dangerous, I guess, and like, credible in terms of a star, because he now has the pieces around him to really do some damage and to help mitigate his weaknesses. And I don't know. I mean... I'm going to be really curious to see what Fultz actually turns into, because he's sort of a blank slate as a player. He doesn't really have many weaknesses. The shooting, it looks like, if that's the only thing you could kind of nitpick, but I think that'll come. And the comp I've been using recently on like the radio and stuff is like Brandon Roy type. And if he's a Brandon Roy next to Ben Simmons, like, that's perfect.
Yeah. So I love Brandon Roy. I'm in a huge soft spot.
I brought that up
in my heart for Brandon Roy. My concern, though, is like, I do wonder, like, has the game already changed enough since Roy was at his peak where like we wouldn't be as excited? Because the Blazers used to slow the pace down like crazy, let him pound, go one on one, lots of mid range. It was beautiful in its own way.
Yeah.
And it was a super elite offense. I think the Blazers were number one in offense, or very close to it, during Roy's sort of peak years. I wonder if we're now, like, if he's that tight of a Roy comp, I wonder if that could almost be a knock.
Yeah.
At least in terms of lowering his ceiling. Look, well, I'm still in on him. I think he's going to be a good player.
Yeah, I think we just have to be realistic about his ceiling. His ceiling is anywhere from Brandon Roy to MVP version of Harden that we saw this year. And if Roy is like a realistic outcome, that's worth the number one pick.
For sure.
The other thing I would add is we've had this week of second-guessing Markelle Fultz, all of which is kind of suspect to me. A lot of people have questioned his explosion and his athleticism, and I don't know, man. I think he's not an A-plus athlete. Like, I think Fox and Dennis Smith are the only two guys who fit that description, but Fultz is right there. He's like an A-minus, and I wouldn't worry about that at all.
So can I switch the subject here to Fox?
Hold on. Okay. I have one more Sixers question for you.
Bring it.
What do you think about the retweet Armageddon stuff?
I used one of the weirdest voices I've ever used on this podcast to mock it on the last episode. I don't know if you caught that. I don't want to redo it again.
We should talk a little bit more, because okay. Spike and Mike are my guys, and I am genuinely happy for all Sixers
Stop
fans.
Stop lying, dude.
No, I am. I just want to clarify that I don't know if the Sixers are really, like, as a process skeptic, I will fully eat crow if they're actually like a juggernaut, but I don't want to move the goalposts too much. Like, as I was having arguments about the Sixers over the last 3 or 4 years, particularly those first 2 or 3 years, like, the party line from Mike Levin was always that this is going to end with a great team, a championship level team. And if Embiid isn't healthy, I'm not sure if Fultz and Simmons are enough to like really sort of justify anything.
Yeah.
So it just...
Here's one part that bothers me about this. They have zero admittance about how dark it got when Embiid got hurt this year. Like, it's like that part of their lives has just been completely erased so that we can go back and crow about all the hinky stuff, right? It's like, it wasn't that long ago where they stared the death of the process squarely in the eyes, and it looked back very, very hauntingly.
Well, and to be very clear, I think what always bugged me about the process is that it was sort of intellectually misleading. Like, a lot of people claimed that it was clever, and really it was just sort of the simplest way to build a team, you know? Like, it was only counterintuitive because nobody had done it before, but it wasn't necessarily like more intuitive or more creative. And really the only element of the process that was particularly like groundbreaking were some of the trades that Hinkie did. And he was in a position to do that because ownership was like, yeah, just tear it down and lose for 4 years.
I mean, his biggest asset was his shamelessness, right?
Yeah.
And he doesn't have a job. So I still think that, you asked me a couple of weeks ago, Like, can we declare this a win for him? And I said, well, he should be popping champagne.
It is, yeah. But he reputationally, really, it's a win for him. But, and it's a win for Spike. I'm happy for all those guys.
It reminds me of Westbrook because this is Martyr Ball GM, right? Like, Martyr Ball on the court is Westbrook's 45 usage, gunning for the triple-double. I'm going to make history. I don't care whether it leads to a top four seed, right?
Yeah.
Martyr Ball GMing is I'm going down with the ship. I don't care how big the flames get. And that's Hinkie. I mean, that's what he did.
Yeah. This was one way to do it. It would just, don't tell me it was a smarter way to do it. Like, it was one way to do it, and other teams would follow suit if they could get away with it.
Look,
but
the thing is, we saw better ways. I mean, look at Golden State.
Yeah.
You know, like, if we're talking who's got the dynasty, you know, there's no question who's going to win more titles over the next 10 years. And yeah. I wouldn't even bet, even with a healthy Embiid, they're necessarily going to win one.
Well, that was the thing. I went back and forth with Mike talking about whether they, like, I'm 100% rooting for them to be able to turn around and say, F you, we're in the finals. It's amazing. Because Embiid is the most enjoyable athlete in sports right now.
Yeah, for you. So, I don't know.
I mean, yeah, I can see
I'm
people
a little
being
over
like,
it.
All right, you're a human meme. I'm okay.
I mean, that's the thing is, like, when you're getting into Twitter wars during the middle of the draft with LeVar Ball, but you've played 31 games in 3 years, do it on the court first.
Yeah.
Know? Like, I get it. Like, you're funny with the punchline. There's a lot of funny people on Twitter.
Yeah, but he's also funny in real life. Like, when we were playing basketball at All-Star, like, he was legitimately fun to play with and was getting into it.
I get it, but he is at the point, skill-wise, where when he cracks a joke on Twitter, that's a headline, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so now you're getting into these, like, troll wars with the troll god, LeVar Ball, and it's like, is that the look you want to have for your franchise? Sixers fans, of course, I'm sure, guys like Mike and Spike, think it's hilarious. Let's run with it. The rest of the world's like, dude, like, stay healthy for 2 weeks. Maybe play a back-to-back for once in your life, right?
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. Embiid, he kind of reminds me of Gilbert Arenas, who became, like, a religious figure to me.
Yeah.
So I totally identify with everybody who worships Embiid.
I'm saying you just can't chase the headlines with your tweets unless you can play 30 minutes in a game. That's
so
it.
To me, the Sixers are a big winner just because I still can't believe they pulled this off. And I still can't believe the Celtics traded that pick and didn't get back the others. Anyways, we've talked about that enough.
No, I've got another story to lay out for you. It was a fantastic contrast today. So this morning, probably nobody watched, but we did a live draft for SI Now Live. And I threw you a couple curveballs, but my first curveball was taking De'Aaron Fox at number 4 for Phoenix. And I was picking all the even numbers. You were picking all the odd numbers. And obviously, I screwed your whole draft because you wanted 5 for Sacramento because everybody wanted Fox at 5. It just made too much sense. We've been talking about it for weeks. Contrast your disappointment in that moment to Garrett Temple, Sacramento Kings player, on set at SI Now. I was sitting right next to him. I told him that story about what had happened right before Phoenix picked at 4. And I was like, you know, we thought Fox at 4 made a lot of sense. And I could just see, like, his body language, like, oh God, oh God, no. Because we've been saying, hey, what do you guys need? And he's like, we need a point guard. So we need a small forward because Rudy Gay is opting out. We don't know about that. Like, that's what he wanted. And he realized that, I mean, to me, it was clear.
Look,
he wanted Fox.
God only knows what Vivek would have traded De'Aaron Fox gone for. Like, and talk leading up to the draft was that they, like, had Lonzo been there. Lonzo and Fox had been there. Like, Vivek was going De'Aaron.
So how does Phoenix not do that? I mean, to me, you just got it. You got to, first of all, you're not going to get stuck with them. You need a point guard.
Yeah.
You have 5 point guards on the roster, but none can really play. None are long-term solutions. You don't even play Bledsoe more than half the season because you're tanking so hard. Bring in this high upside point guard with charisma, pair him with Booker, and have an awesome team, right? They didn't do that. Once they got Fox at 5, his smile was so wide, Andrew. I could kind of, he was almost like living vicariously through you. I mean, I could just feel you guys were probably somewhere in different rooms with the exact same reaction.
Yeah.
And remarkably, I can't believe I'm going to say this. Vlade won the draft.
Yes.
He might have won the draft. Vlade Divac might have won the draft.
So, yeah. I mean, I filed my draft grades. I don't know if they're up right now, but that was the final team was the Kings. They got an A+.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether to trust it. It's like with the NFL draft. Every year, the Jaguars come away with an A, and they then follow that up with another hot 3-13 year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the Kings aren't going to be good next year, number one. We know that. But has given what was in play for them, this was the best case scenario.
Do you know what my theory is? I think that they figured out how to do an anti-Vivek. Like, whatever Vivek wanted to do, they were going to do the exact opposite this year. Because last year, they made every mistake you can make. Draft somebody that nobody's ever heard of way too early with the lottery pick, and then take another guy who dropped way far, and you don't have any minutes to play him, and you ultimately have to trade your franchise center to even open up any time for him.
Right.
Horrible mistakes. This year, they take a high upside point guard at a huge position of need with multiple years to be able to groom him. If he turns into a superstar, home run pick.
Yeah.
Then they trade back, which is like considered the Bill Belichick way to manage your assets, right?
Well, and also Zach Collins was sitting right there, and I could see a version of them say, like, there, it would have made sense to maybe talk themselves into Zach Collins, but I don't think he's going to be very good in the pick and roll. And he's just, he's the prototype that doesn't totally fit with where the league is going among like the best teams. And so it would have been kind of a lazy pick to make.
Yeah.
A classic Kings pick.
For sure. But then they get Justin Jackson, position of need. I know you're not his biggest fan.
No.
But I think that's pretty good value at 15, right?
For them, yeah. It makes sense.
And then you get the extra pick on the two first round picks for one first round pick, which historically, like the draft guys who do the little points on the charts and say who gets the better, usually it pans out. If you trade two for one,
dude,
the team that gets multiple picks is going to have a better shot. And they take the ultimate flyer, Harry Giles.
And Harry Giles would have been risky at like 10. I'm sure they were thinking about Harry Giles at 10. But Harry Giles with a free first round pick basically is a no-brainer.
They handed you the first round pick. He's going to make probably less than $2 million on his first year of his contract. He's been working back. It's not like he got injured 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they did almost every smart thing you could possibly do. Like, if any other franchise had done this, I think there would have been insane gushing. And I hope, for sake of fairness, Sacramento, have your day.
You know, I didn't gush. I was just like, I don't know what happened here. I don't want to jinx anything. But I think the Kings had the best draft.
Paul George to Sacramento.
Yeah. So we'll see where it stands. You know, let's get Michael Porter in there next year. Let's lose 60 games. But the future is weirdly bright in Sacramento. And I've been saying that for a month now. And I understand if listeners think that I've lost my mind. But tonight was a win for them.
I didn't
sure.
believe it. I don't necessarily still believe that. I just think they nailed their draft. Let me ask you the flip side, though, from Portland's standpoint. Two first round picks to get Collins.
Yeah, what the hell was that?
That's a big...
You're the Blazers guy, right? Like, what are they doing?
No, I have no idea. And what do we say they had to do? Dump salary, right? They didn't dump any salary. They had three first-round picks. They just threw one of them away, and they took another guy, a project, at a position where they've already got guys kind of locked into the spot, right?
Yeah, and I understand the people who like Zach Collins, but, I mean, he's going to probably struggle to contribute meaningfully over the next couple of years. And then even if he evolves... He plays a position that, you know, good teams don't really need.
I'm also not a fan of the provincial picks for any team. Like, if you get the guy, the Pacific Northwest guy, I hate that. You know, it killed me when Minnesota took Tyus Jones, you know, because he's like a Minnesota high school basketball legend.
I like that.
Yeah, I know.
I wanted
everybody
Frank Jackson to go to Utah this year.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No, I hate those.
So, I was bummed out because I thought that the Blazers were going to do something more creative. I wanted them to try to jump into the Paul George sweepstakes somehow. But alas, you know, can't win them all. They're in the losers section. And another team that's in the losers section, the Detroit Pistons. Luke Kennard, I don't really see him being able to play defense in the NBA.
Yeah.
And I don't see him being a good enough scorer to be on the court for and to justify like what he's going to give up on the defensive end, particularly if he's playing like 35 minutes a game.
Yeah.
So why did Stan Van Gundy just use a lottery pick on him?
I don't really know. When we were doing our mock draft, that was like my most reluctant pick. I don't think I've had him at 12, and maybe I had him at 14.
Yeah.
But I was like so half-heartedly.
People seem to like him.
So
I don't know.
So half-heartedly making the case for him.
And he can score, and he's not just like a shooter.
Yeah.
But I would still be wary of taking him with a pick that high. And I just think generally it might be time to take the keys away from Stan Van Gundy.
Yeah, I agree with that. Another thing is, it just shows how depressing their season was, because they were never a factor, really, in the playoff chase, right?
Yeah.
And yet, and they have no stars on their team. I mean, unless you want to really be complimentary of Drummond, you know, real favorable towards Drummond. And yet, here they are picking, not in the top five, you know, not with a player who's going to have any upside. It's like, how did they manage to be completely depressing the entire way and still not have hope here on draft night?
Yeah, it's not
it's just
great.
A different way to look at it. You know what I mean? It's like one of those optical illusion puzzles, like the lady or the lamp, you know, like you saw the lady of the regular season and it was horrible and we all tuned out very early. And now you're seeing like the lamp version of it. And it's like, oh, they have Luke Kennard. Home run. Is anyone even going to show up to his draft press conference?
Can I be perfectly honest with you?
You don't know what the lady in the lamp is?
Well, it's just a little late, and I wasn't totally paying attention, and so I zoned out and came back for the lady in the lamp, and you just sort of lost me. I think we should move on to the Mavericks, because they're in the winners category. Dennis Smith is a pretty big win for them, right?
Just value.
Yeah, I think value. I'm not as high on him, but you look at the Mavs, they're a team that probably should have been tanking for the better part of the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And just to bottom out and kind of like replenish the roster a little bit, and they have refused to do so. And now they've kind of fallen ass backwards into players with all kinds of upside. I mean, Nerlens as a potential building block at center makes a lot of sense. Dennis Smith has top five talent, and would have gone top five last year, would probably go top five next year. And they, like, those are two great pieces. Barnes as a secondary guy makes a lot of sense, is really solid. I don't know. I mean, I think there was a like 30-minute window after the Smith pick where people were really high on the Mavericks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's probably best to sort of temper the expectations a little bit. Like, Dennis Smith could be really good in 3 years, but it's not going to be great until then, I don't think. But they're in much better shape than I would have imagined.
Yeah.
Like, in February, I was watching them being like, why the hell are they winning games? What is wrong with Rick Carlisle?
He can't help himself.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. But I think tonight was a solid step forward for them.
Yeah, it's weird too, because they like never do anything in the draft. So it feels so strange to even be talking about them like in the draft context. So we'll see how it goes. I do think your kind of cautious timeline with them makes a lot of sense. I have one question for you in terms of, do you see these guys as winners or losers? When we did our mock draft at number 6, I kind of swung for the fences for Orlando and I took Malik Monk just under the premise that I didn't like their guards, try to find a shooting slash score in that position. Instead, they go Isaac, which is a lot of the mock drafts had Isaac going 6.
Yeah.
But is that a position of need for them? Does that really make sense fit-wise? Are they drafting on ceiling there? Does he make sense with a guy like Gordon? How's that going to play out? And then are they now in this situation where we still don't know who their best player is going to be?
So I wrote about that too. Jonathan Isaac feels like another version of Aaron Gordon, and it bums me out because I really like Jonathan Isaac, and in the right situation, whether it was Phoenix, whether it was Boston, whether it was Minnesota, he could have really helped. Orlando's not that situation. I think Orlando, I can imagine the team selling fans on his upside as like a potential Giannis type guy, mm-hmm. who can really like lift them up on both ends.
I'm not sure I see that.
Yeah, he's more of a sort of a Swiss Army knife role player type who can be super valuable. We've seen all kinds of guys like that. Draymond Green is the ultimate example, but I don't know. I mean, I think the Magic, long term, it makes sense for them to suck again next year. And
they're not going to have a choice.
It's kind of a bummer how many teams in the lottery we said that about. To me, they're a little bit of a loser. I would have taken Dennis Smith if I were them.
Got it.
The other guy I want to talk about, though,
okay,
while we're on the subject, Malik Monk. We're not going to pick many players as losers from this draft, But he was looking at life in New York City as Kristaps Porzingis' sidekick.
But we knew they were going to take the weird foreign point guard over him, didn't we, the whole way?
It's true, but I just can't get over what a step down it is to go from like a lifetime of pick and rolls with Porzingis to Charlotte and this weird existence as like with Kemba Walker in the backcourt. I mean, I think it's a win if you're the Hornets because he's got plenty of upside and could be fun down the road, and is also someone who, like, I don't know how married they are to like the long term with Kemba, but I'm just bummed out for Malik Monk, man. Yeah. I wanted to see him on the Knicks.
I mean, I think if we spin this positively for him, soft launch, right?
Right.
Like, they already have pretty much vets at all the key spots.
That's true.
He plugs in. Also, they just traded Bellinelli in the Dwight Howard blockbuster deal. So there's minutes there potentially for him to play, like a reasonable role, not 0 minutes, not too many minutes.
Yeah.
So I think they can kind of work him in year one. But if you want to get to the ceiling, you know, you'd way rather be one of these point guards who's got the keys, or these lead guards who's got the keys for bad teams, than fitting in around some of these other guys in Charlotte.
Yeah, he's also he's from the South, so maybe he'll enjoy it in Charlotte. He's from Arkansas, but yeah, I don't know. I think
that's like 1,000 miles away. I feel like we're gonna get emails saying like Arkansas,
well,
North Carolina,
South. I don't know. I'm also Dwight Howard is a big part of this. I want to watch Malik Monk next year. I do not want to watch Dwight Howard. I'm a little bit frustrated.
Well, I threw out my theory about Dwight not getting to start over Cody Zeller in front of the NBA players today, just to kind of gauge their reaction if it was going to drop jaws or not.
Yeah.
I thought for sure they were going to look at me like I was nuts. And in the truest definition of Dwight Howard's falling stock, they didn't even blink. So that's rough. So like, yeah, you're right. Maybe they're going to be spending a lot of second unit minutes together.
It's tough. All right, well, let's finish up here with a couple more. Quick one. Draft nerd in me has to highlight the Jazz.
Yeah,
they grabbed Donovan Mitchell
because of trade, right?
Yep.
So I feel like Trey Lyles is the headliner of that trade. So.
Yeah. What happened to Trey Lyles?
So
we need some anonymous tipsters to hit up openfloormail@gmail.com.
So I don't know this for a fact.
After they leave a 5-star review
on iTunes, and also guys, Instagram, Ben.Golliver, I'm blowing up.
What did Trey Lyles do to piss off Quinn Snyder?
That's the thing. I don't know what it was, but I think it was pretty clearly like a coaching trust issue, because we came into last year expecting him to play real minutes as like that sort of secondary look.
He was good. Yeah. He was good as a rookie.
Yeah, and we thought, hey, if they have to shift away from two bigs, Trey Lyles makes all the sense in the world. Diao came out of the gate looking rough last year. And so it was like, well, you have an option here. Jazz fans were screaming all season long, play him, play him, play him. It's not like Diao is going to reverse time here. And favors, can you count on him? I don't. At this point, if I'm the Jazz, I'm thinking real strongly about trading him. So
that's another thing. We should go back and listen to the SI Top 100 podcast, because I was right about literally everything.
No, you were not.
I told
dude.
You favors has been hurt forever. I think the Jazz are finally beginning to realize that. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know what happened with Lyles, but he's clearly not, I mean, clearly not the answer.
That just seems like a real questionable move for me. His new fit is interesting because they seem like they've got their centers locked in, especially if they bring Plumlee back in free agency. So then that kind of locks him in as stretch four. Gallinari question mark. I'm not sure what's going to happen there. It sounds like he's been in talks potentially to move as well. So is that an improvement for him? I mean, do you look at that? I mean, obviously, if he's not getting any time in Utah, it probably can't be any worse. But
right.
I think we've had some weird rotation questions in Denver too.
Totally. They have too many guys. Yeah. They have too many good, promising young players to find minutes for them.
Yeah.
And that is another topic. But Donovan Mitchell, I also wonder what he means for their future. Like, it kind of seems like a cue that they're not going to go big for George Hill.
Yeah, we were doing the site in our studio. We were wondering that as well. It's like, is this a hedge move? Like, is this one of those where it's like, we're hoping that we can bring Hayward back. Maybe we're 50-50 on whether we can get Hill back. put that together. We're not super confident we're bringing both of them back, so we better have some sort of a backup plan.
Yeah, credit to them, though. They're taking action.
Yeah.
Like that's why they're winners to me, because the alternative move would be to just sort of sit on their hands and be like, well, there's a lot in play, a lot up in the air. Let's just wait and see how this goes. Like, they're sort of covering their ass a little bit, which is a smart move.
One of the biggest losers is going to be Adam Silver. If Utah turns into this incubator for the super teams, like if the Spurs just snatch
George
Hill, the Spurs just snatch George Hill, right?
Yeah.
And then the Celtics just poach Gordon Hayward, and Utah Jazz slowly build things up the right way, doing it internally, well, going with the youth movement, making calculated additions, and all of a sudden it just blows up. And they're
but the Spurs developed George Hill.
I get what you're saying, but you get what I mean. Like, this was the very traditional long rebuild. We send out Al Jefferson. We send out Paul Millsap.
We traded Deron Williams at the perfect time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, they did everything right. And they're also the quintessential small market team. They're not the only one. There's other small market teams out there.
Yeah.
But, like, if anyone's not going to be able to replace star guys via free agency or trades, it's going to be them. It's very similar to the Oklahoma City situation. So if you have this competitive balance issue being discussed constantly throughout the playoffs, and then July 1 hits and George Hill goes to San Antonio and Gordon Hayward goes to Boston, that is a terrible look for the league.
Well, it's a tricky spot for Silver because I don't think he really cares about small markets.
You've been defending him in new and impressive ways every time he comes up.
He has to pretend to care, but I don't think the league can or should care because the bottom line is the whole NBA is better off when there are five good teams, most of whom are from big markets. That's part of what made this draft so much fun. But now that we've pissed off the entire state of Utah with that.
Hey, guys, I still love you. All five national parks get 5-star reviews from me.
Yeah. Didn't somebody send you an Instagram from Utah?
Oh, they did. Yeah. They said, how could Gordon Hayward leave this? And it was a beautiful picture of a river in my Instagram DMs. I love you guys. You're the best. We have the best listeners. I've been bragging about our listeners actually all weekend long. I'm like, guys, we're really onto something. We've tapped in to the knowledgeable basketball fans who love a conversation.
All right. Two more things here before we call it. The Suns. I wrote about, I'm a huge fan of Josh Jackson in Phoenix. so it's kind of a 180 from our podcast a week ago, but I love his role with the Suns.
You're
there.
Playing Twister right now.
It's great. It's great. I'm all in. And I actually was so in that I wrote in the draft grades, I wrote like, Suns have had a great young core for a couple years, and Josh Jackson is the final piece of the puzzle.
Okay.
And our editor, Matt Dollinger,
was like, don't let Ben see this.
No, came out and was like, I'm going to take that out. I don't think Josh Jackson is the final piece of the puzzle with the Suns.
So let me ask
you. And it's a fair point.
Going into next season, who's their best five? Like, do you throw Bender and Chris and Jackson and Booker into that mix with Bledsoe? Or they trade Bledsoe? I mean,
well, my guy TJ Warren,
yeah,
supreme bucket getter.
I can't tell if you're being serious.
No, I am. I love TJ Warren. He was on my fantasy team. Eric Bledsoe, Devin Booker, Josh Jackson. I'd say TJ Warren's probably best coming off the bench.
Okay.
They're gonna start Marquese Chris, which Marquese Chris showed some signs, was also a really valuable tanking weapon this year, but I think he could be pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm a Chris believer. And then Tyson Chandler at center, who is not entirely washed up. He's like 60 to 70%
washed up. He had a semi-bounce back last year, but he was rough two seasons ago.
I know. They need a center, and Bender is...
Is it Bender?
No, I don't think... He hasn't shown. I mean, he wasn't healthy last year. We kind of have to wait and see there. But
it's 2017, right?
Yeah, but they're probably going to win 30 games next year.
What you're laying out here really has a check back in 2020 vibe to it.
Yeah, it does. But listen, they're going to be fun to watch.
Oh, but you're in. You're in early.
Look, the Suns are the new Wolves, the team that I'm fake obsessed with.
That you don't actually
League
watch?
Pass. Yeah. And the Wolves are the new team that I'm actually going to watch on League Pass, the Jimmy Butler Wolves.
I'm cool with that. Hey, I have one question for you.
Uh-huh.
LaMarcus Aldridge and the potentially...
You know what? He's a loser. He unfollowed the Spurs tonight and didn't get traded.
Oh, I didn't hear about the unfollow.
Yeah.
What other drama happened?
Well, I don't know. My brain sort of glazed over.
Without knowing any of the context, I'm disappointed in LaMarcus again. I was disappointed in the Western Conference Finals. You should be a Spur for life. If you make it to the Spurs, you should never want to leave under any circumstances.
Well, it's
and
funny.
That says something about you as a person, not just a player, if you don't want to be a Spur for life.
I didn't realize how I felt about LaMarcus Aldridge until there were some LaMarcus Aldridge to the Wizards rumors.
Uh-oh, and you got nervous?
No, well, first of all, another Wizards fan, Ben Becker, pointed out, you know, if you can't make it work in San Antonio, that's probably a red flag. Fair point, number
definitely
one.
A red flag.
And number two, I was thinking it through. I was like, I don't want to watch LaMarcus Aldridge next year. Like, I don't want to watch Jan Mahinmi, but I also don't want to watch LaMarcus Aldridge. And it was almost Dwight level, where I was like, he might make us better, but I don't care. Like, don't bring him to DC.
Like, the impact on your net, point differential isn't enough to offset the impact on, like, the viewing fun and potential.
Yeah, so he's in the losers category. And I want to finish up here with one more. We touched on it earlier in the podcast, but we need to talk about the Knicks as a general, like, what is the state of the Knicks after this week?
Well, the Melo question is the one that really hasn't been talked about because of all this Porzingis stuff, right?
Yeah.
That's still looming. It's not like Phil Jackson didn't completely insult him left and right over these last couple of months. And I don't really know how that gets resolved, because if you're seeing how much a guy like Jimmy Butler gets traded for, you know, what's Melo's trade value? I mean, is it less than Dwight Howard's? Possibly. I mean, I think it's really, really low.
I think he's buyout territory at this point.
But is Phil too stubborn to do that? I mean, I think he's been in buyout territory, right? Is he ever going to admit that he just can't swing a deal, or is he just going to be like, well, if we're not just going to pay him to go away?
Well, and also, I mean, speaking of Phil being stubborn, how do they bring these guys back after this week? You know, like, the team is just a mess. Melo clearly doesn't want to be there, like, for all the reasons we've laid out for the last 2 years. But then also, they didn't do the Porzingis deal, but they spent 5 days antagonizing him.
Yeah, the Porzingis stuff still doesn't make sense to me. I think Phil's got to be better than this. You know, I look at GM and coach as just two completely different jobs. Mind games works more as a coach than it could ever possibly work as a GM. He's not controlling the message. He's not putting his team in a position to succeed. He's not fostering a quality chemistry where people want to go play for them. They want to sign with them. And he's not helping a young player get any better. He's distracting him. And I feel bad for Porzingis. Look, I understand, slap him on the wrist, fine him, punish him for not showing up to the exit meeting. I mean, that should be a pretty simple thing to do.
Uh-huh.
How does this become a 2-week story?
I don't know.
Or a 2-month story?
I don't know. And
that's on the GM. That's management. That's how it is.
Not only that, if you're trying to trade him, don't come out and talk about trading him publicly. Yeah. Don't come out and talk about what you're looking to get back publicly. That's not how you negotiate.
Yeah. He's just bad at his job. I think it's pretty simple. Like,
I mean, well, can we also, I want to qualify one thing. Porzingis, it shouldn't be as untradeable as he seems.
Yeah.
To Knicks fans. And he kind of became like a thing on the internet where everybody was talking about Porzingis like he was Anthony Davis. And he's not. He's been injured more than people want to admit.
Yeah.
And he hasn't been as good as, like, the hype suggests. He has moments where you're like, whoa, this dude is something different. But he's not as consistent as guys like Towns and Anthony Davis. And if you could get, so I understand in a vacuum saying, look, we don't know if this guy's going to stay healthy. Let's see if we can get 3 lottery picks for him. And, like, that makes sense to me. Doing it because of an exit interview is the crazy part. And that's where I think there's some of this that's like a generational thing where it's a player's first league now, even more than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And Phil may understand it and just not give a shit and be too stubborn to sort of adjust. But
Now, Phil had two binders full of reverse pivot diagrams that he had to show Porzingis before he left for Latvia, and he didn't get a chance to do it, and his feelings are hurt, and he's not happy about it. And there's a lot of things that you said that I don't necessarily completely agree with, but here's where I stand on Porzingis. He was almost an all-star last year despite everything. Yeah. Coaching change, year two, super young, not his team, Melo's presence, all of these, no point guard. You know, yeah. I'm not a Rose guy, period. All these things working against him. He was still almost an all-star. Yes, he faded in the second half of the season. Yes, he's had some injury issues. I understand that. But when
I'm not down on Porzingis.
Yeah, no, I know you're not. This is where I stand on him. I'm saying that if he is purely in a vacuum, his vacuum value is probably higher than, I think it is higher than it looks like in New York, because they're, you know, in a vacuum, he probably have more support than he's got there right now.
Yeah.
And so if I'm looking at like franchise building block guys, to me, he's not Giannis. To me, he's not Towns yet. To me, he's not Davis yet, but he is on a very short list of those guys. And so I think he gets put into this untradeable category of like completely untouchable because New York has nothing else.
Yeah.
Right? Like if we talked about their draft needs, we'd say they need a new owner. They need a new coach, probably. They need a new GM for sure. They need a new point guard. They need to get rid of Melo. I mean, their list of draft needs is like too long to even like put into a single paragraph, right? It's basically everything besides Porzingis. They didn't really address any of that besides bringing in a young point guard. So I'm not super hopeful for what happens next year if they just roll this thing back. I think it's going to be continued disaster. But you can't trade him. Regardless, Phil has to make this right. This is his job. It's not Porzingis' job. Porzingis is not going to skip training camp. He'll show up on first day of training camp. He's going to do his media day stuff. He's going to handle himself like a professional going forward. This to me is on Phil. And Phil hasn't only been unprofessional towards Porzingis. He was very unprofessional towards Melo in terms of trying to negotiate in public and push him out the door. So much so that the National Basketball Players Association had to put out a press release defending Carmelo Anthony's honor. That is ridiculous.
Yeah, God, I forgot about that midway through the playoffs. So maybe this just has to get worse before it gets better. Like maybe Porzingis' agent has to take some shots at Phil. Yeah. Like Porzingis, I think his older brother is his rep, or one of them.
But those guys are nice guys. Like, don't try to paint this as like, oh, it's his family steering him wrong. You're not. But people, I think people might, right? They hear, oh, brother's involved, hands
and
on.
And by the way, we went over that. We were talking about this morning. I think that it was sort of a self-preservation thing to skip the exit interview. Yeah. Because imagine how pedantic and condescending Phil Jackson is in those exit interviews, lecturing you about needing to learn how to play in the post a little bit more, like lay off the threes a little bit. And meanwhile, you're sitting there, you're like, dude, you just spent $80 million on Joakim Noah. And like, I just had to play with Derrick Rose and watch him shoot 25 shots a game all year.
And you're about to do a video interview with like a state run news organization where you tell them that you trust us. We know what we're doing. And nobody believed
you. It's like, honestly, Porzingis, the most respectful thing he could have done was skip that interview. Like, yeah. I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, I hope it gets bad enough. And I don't think this is the last we're going to hear about Porzingis rumors. Yeah. And I hope it gets worse to the point where Dolan, I mean, I don't want to count on Dolan to do anything, but someone's got to step in and say, look, Phil, this is not working.
Oh, by the way, we didn't even mention the part about how Charles Oakley got dragged out of Madison Square Garden. Did Phil show any leadership on that either, by the way? Or did he just sit quietly and slink off to the side? Because that's another situation where, look, if you're being paid as much as Phil Jackson's being paid to be the face of the basketball side of the organization, you've got to sign free agents, you've got to negotiate trades with the guys, you've got to work with agents, and they're seeing Charles Oakley. I mean, you heard the outrage from former players from the National Basketball Players Association surrounding that Oakley incident. And Phil's just like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. And now we're all going to do it. Just run it back next year.
Because you were saying, like, it's got to get really bad. Well, I'm picturing those security guards. Yeah. It was really bad.
It was really bad. Well, look, we opened the podcast making the case for the Bulls as the most depressing team.
We came home.
Yeah. The Knicks, I think, might still have the throne. I don't know. You decide. We'll let the listeners decide.
I'm coming home.
We're gonna be back next Tuesday. I'm going to go home and pass out, but Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening all year. This the last like 2 months were sort of a grind. It was a lot of fun, and the next couple weeks are gonna get even wilder. So anyways, we'll be back Tuesday.
5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, guys. We appreciate you. Send in your questions, openfloormail@gmail.com. We'll talk soon.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.